listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, okay, hello, welcome to episode number 300 of the Self-Help Podcast. Da, 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 da. We made it.
We just opened the champagne.
High five. How about that? Not bad. 300 episodes.
I don't know how we survived.
I know. We've learned a lot along the way, though, haven't we?
We have, yeah. Yeah.
About all sorts of things.
We're about to learn about women.
And we're going to talk about women today. It's International Women's Day. The day after this goes out, March the 8th, 2019.
So what do you think of the appropriateness of two fellas talking about women?
Well,
do you think people are going to be going, what are you doing talking about women?
Well, let's see. We did try to find a woman. There are some across there, actually. But Rhee, are one of our favourite women in the world.
Yeah, and Bethan.
And Bethan, yeah. Yeah,
they're not here.
Well, but they couldn't make it, or we couldn't quite schedule sync diaries. We're all so busy, men and women, aren't we?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that shortly. liveinthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. It's actually, as I write this, it's offline. We're having a few technical issues with the website, but hopefully, well, if you're hearing this podcast,
then it's back up.
It's back up because no website, no podcast. So apologies for anyone who's tried to be listening the last couple of days, but we'll get there.
Yeah, you end up playing catch up.
Yeah. What have you been up to, Sean? How's tricks?
Life's amazing. I'm into making sourdough bread.
Yeah.
Which has been, you know, when you do something, you just think, I can do this. I'm in the fourth week. Feedback has been amazing. But at the weekend, I made my first butter, my own butter. So organic butter to go with my organic bread.
So what's the process at home for that?
For making butter.
Churning. Does it involve churning?
Well, I'd like to say that it's a really complex process, but you know how long it takes to make a block of butter?
Go on.
10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
What's he starting?
All you do, I got two small pots of whipping cream, stuck them in the KitchenAid mixer with the bloom whisk.
Got one of those now.
Yeah. So
I got one for my wife for Christmas. How's that
very
for
good.
Gender?
Genderisation. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's really handy though, must I? Yeah.
You whip the cream till it turns into cream, like frothy cream.
Yeah.
But then you just keep going, and then suddenly it turns into butter. Wow. And you have to kind of wash it with ice-cold water a couple of times, and then squeeze the water out of it and pat it. But it's amazing that just a couple of pots of cream, 10 minutes, and you've got a big block of butter.
How much cream is needed to make a big block of butter?
Just two small pots of us.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing. And the thing is that it ends up...
Just a bit of salt in there, a pinch of salt.
Well, no, then you've got a choice. The reason why I started making it was because I wanted to try the idea of making, there it is.
Beautiful. Yeah, that looks like butter.
Yeah.
It's a block of butter.
I wanted to try making truffle butter because we'd been to a restaurant and they served sourdough bread with truffle butter. Mm. And I thought, okay, let's try that. So I know how to make the basic butter. So now I'm just learning about the flavourings and making the herb butters and stuff like that.
Wow. Very nice.
Well, the fact that like 10 minutes to make a block, it's like nothing. You know, you think, oh, how do you make butter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think it's some crazy huge process, but...
So that's this week's bread.
You're getting through a lot of bread. Are you dishing this out?
No, I'm giving it away to people.
When am I on the list?
I ought to bring sourdough. I take it into the hospital on a Monday and it just goes whoosh. It's gone,
So, beautiful. Yeah. Very good. I need to get back in the bread making swing. I went on a course years ago. I think it was my 30th birthday. Someone got me a course, and we need to go on that Italian course, don't we?
Yeah, we've got that one to do.
We'll book that in.
Yeah.
Shortly. Lots going on, lots to do. I'm launching my little CIC community company.
Yep.
Week on Thursday, which should be fun. Inviting the great and the good from Liverpool City Region. See what happens.
Yeah.
A couple of projects in the pipeline. So watch this space. I'm thinking about doing another podcast actually for it to talk about my obsessions with all that stuff. So, yeah, it's exciting times, right?
Well, if I can be there for your launch, I will be there.
True. Bring some cards. Yeah. There's going to be some interesting folks in the room, I think.
It's all down to clients. I've never been so busy in all my life. I'm thinking here, I'm trying to wind down, and it gets crazier and crazier.
You're winding up.
Yeah.
Mm. So. There's a lot of work to do, man.
Yeah, brilliant. Mad.
Let's talk about International Women's Day and women and gender inequality as a whole. Internationalwomensday.com is the official website for the campaign this year. It's on March the 8th, but I assume it's something that we can talk about and enact and think about in everyday life all the time, isn't it? Because we all have in our minds, men, women, whatever you are, maybe if you don't even consider yourself to have a gender, which is a thing now. We all have our inbuilt kind of stereotypes and ways of thinking and doing. They're open to change, those ideas, aren't they, Sean?
Yeah, there is evidence that it's becoming clearer that the neurology of men and women is relatively similar, but the way that it's used is different.
Yeah.
And it's to do with the information. And the female brain tends to go from side to side, but in the male brain goes from the back to the front.
Blimey, all right.
It's moving in two different directions. And that's why you get multitasking and monotasking.
Yeah, because we do have actual, obviously, physical and scientific differences, men and women, we're capable of different things, aren't we?
Yeah.
Although the kind of the stereotypical thing, the role of a man and a woman has changed a lot in 10, 15, 20 years or so.
I think that's the kind of socioeconomic thing. The thing that I'd say about women generally, and I think this is a reality in everything that I've ever done, I think women run the world, and I think women always have run the world, and I think men think they run the world, and they don't. And it's like, if you look at it economically, it's something like women do 80% of the work and get 20% of the resources, and men do 20% of the work and get 80% of the resources. It's that kind of thing. And if you look at all the things that women do, so from my point of view, men go on the battlefield and beat each other up, and then when they've finished, women go on and sort them all out.
And fix.
Yeah.
So what you're allowed out.
Yeah. And if you look at virtually every household that you know, it's run by a woman. You know, the woman is the dominant nest maker, and then very often alongside that, the woman wants to take control of the finance, and so, and very often that's the way that it works.
Well, what's the setup in your gaff then?
Yeah, it's like that.
Do you think it's like that?
Yeah, yeah. I think that the nesting instinct of the female is much stronger than the nesting instinct of the male.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yes, that certainly. Kind of thing. And so when it comes down to things like, you know, decorating and things needing to be done, the man might not even see it. And the woman says, we need to repaint this. And you're looking thinking, do we? But it's the drive is that way round. And I think that's true in most houses.
Yeah, I mean, you think ours is, you know, the way my family is kind of evolved, you know, since I got married, it's quite interesting, really. I mean, Bethan is a teacher. You know, I've been self-employed for 10 years, so her salary and income is much more dependable than mine has been. Mine's kind of up and down, peaks and troughs and all that stuff. And then obviously kids have come on the scene for us, so I'm hands-on dad doing the school run and getting home. Usually the first one to get home and get dinner going and all that stuff. Finances are that's my side of things as well, actually, so I take care of all that stuff. But it's a team effort. But still, you know, there are kind of the quite traditional roles going on there as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that when you get a couple, same-sex couple, male or female, you still get the same split where one will take the feminine role and one the male role. Occasionally you'll get people, either heterosexual or single-sex, where it is a genuinely shared event. But most people play to their strength and their skills, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, legally speaking, in the UK, things have come on a lot. I mean, certainly in 100 years and even much less than that, obviously, in terms of voting rights. We've got Equal Pay Act of 1970, I've got noted down here. We've got the Sex Discrimination Act of 1975, or the Equality Acts of 2006 and 2010.
But do you think it's bizarre that those equality ideas are happening so late? I mean, we're talking about not that long ago.
I know, well, those two, especially within the last 10 years.
That's crazy.
It's pretty mad how we have to write these things down, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess. But we've evolved a system of governance that was very much weighted towards us fellas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Over centuries and centuries.
Yeah.
But, I mean, despite those... I mean, I guess the fact that they are in law and they have been very recently put into law suggests that we still have a lot of work to do. So just because the laws are there, it doesn't mean that employers or, you know, certain organisations aren't, maybe even without even realising, kind of introducing everyday sexism, as it's called. I mean, what's your, in terms of looking big organisations like the NHS or bigger companies, do you see sexism on the go all the time?
Yeah, and my experience is that most of the organisations are male-dominated, but when you get females or a female system, like a lot of nurses or something like that, very often the women that take control by developing male characteristics.
Right.
And my classic model for that, you can actually see this on YouTube if you look it up, they show you how Maggie Thatcher changed from when she was an MP through to when she finally left office as the Prime Minister, and how she became from quite a feminine woman, and she developed more masculine traits, like her voice got deeper and her whole kind of styling changed, and the way that she used her body and her arms, everything becomes more masculine over time.
Do you think that was deliberate, or do you think, I mean, as in she kind of, or just she had to, as she was going on, she had to adapt to this, what was quite traditionally a man's role,
well,
in a man's world.
I believe, I couldn't swear to this, but I believe that she was coached into having a deeper voice because it was seen as having more authority.
Okay.
If you had a deeper voice, it would carry more weight. Mm-hmm. But there is an interesting question that was raised just before we went on air, which was the one about, is it that a woman who's playing those kinds of roles starts to develop more testosterone in her system, which drives us towards being... We talk about a man being in touch with his feminine side. Is it the woman gets in touch with her masculine side and becomes more pushy, maybe? Yep. More outgoing?
Well, we all, every day, you know, whether it's we're talking about gender inequality or anything, we're all making slight little changes to ourselves, aren't we, to adapt to the world that we're in and the people we're around.
Yeah.
And even, you know, on an hour-by-hour basis, you know, I can... I'll turn on a certain style of Ed depending on who I'm meeting with, depending on kind of what situation it is, or, you know, I'm meeting a lot of local politicians at the moment, so I'll kind of adapt my behaviour and mannerisms appropriately.
Do you develop or adapt the way you dress? Do you dress differently?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, big time. Yeah, right now, you know, well, I got soaked on my way into work this morning, so I'm kind of in my waterproof trousers and... But I guess, yeah, totally, you know. I don't adapt my mode of transport because I always try and show up on a bike. But
that's you making a point.
That's me making a point that you can you can ride a bike and not look like you're dressed to go into war or something like that. Or...
I used to dress predominantly in suits, very often pinstripe. With a tie.
Pinstripe suit, yeah. Guy, blimey.
Yeah, but the problem was, and that was okay in business, in the hospital settings and the medical settings, you end up getting called doctor, and that isn't what you need if you're trying to do the psychotherapy, but I need to be Sean.
Yeah.
So I started changing the way I'd got rid of the tie, got rid of the jacket and just had the waistcoat, then got rid of the waistcoat, and then went down to a pair of jeans. and if I wear a pair of jeans and a pair of baseball boots and just an open neck shirt, I'm just Sean.
Yeah.
As soon as I start dressing like the part, I become doctor. And that doesn't work.
And you don't want that because you want to be approachable and people need to open up.
Yeah.
Almost, so you're putting yourself at a level below, almost.
Yeah, but it's funny because I will go and meet with other doctors, consultants and stuff like that, and they're all dressed in the standard, and I'm dressed in the... in the scruffs, as it were, you know. But that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been self-employed and my work has all come through referrals and word of mouth, really, so, and that's come from networking and meeting and shaking a lot of hands in my time as a self-employed designer. So in the world of small business networking is a really fascinating world. As you came to our networking group for quite a while, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
To meet some really interesting characters, and you might have made a lot of friends through all that, as well as clients. And men and women go to those things, and I've got a friend who is also self-employed, and she doesn't like going to those networking events much, never has done, had to though, to kind of build a reputation and get to know people, because she always felt a little bit like a lot of the men that she was meeting were just there to try and instigate some kind of relationship with her in some kind of way.
Well, yeah, right.
In either an obvious or a subtle kind of way. So she doesn't like going to networking events, which...
That's interesting.
And I wonder... yeah, obviously, you know, I wonder if that's like how a lot of women in the business world see it, or whether I'm contributing to that in any way, you know, when I'm going to these events and meeting the women and, you know, being... hopefully not, like, overdoing it with the flirting or anything like that. But... You know, I'm trying to be affable and friendly and, you know, trying to ultimately win people over. But am I putting people off?
I don't know. We're in a strange gender space at the moment where people are trying to work out who they are and where they are and what they are.
Yeah.
And who's allowed to say what to whom. But I told you before a couple of episodes ago about me holding the door open for a woman in the hospital, and she told me I was an effing chauvinist pig for opening the door for her. And I'm thinking, well... That's amazing, because I would have opened the door for a fella or anything. You know,
just, yeah. I guess what we're talking about mainly here is initially just a level of awareness. These are the same topics that over 300 episodes we keep coming back to.
Hmm.
So are you aware of the signals you're sending every day when you talk to people? Even when you're sending an email. I've been looking on this list of... There's a website called everydaysexism.com set up by a lady called Laura Bates, a writer, and she set this website up just so that people could submit examples of everyday sexism, the tiny little things that might happen in someone's day, which subconsciously or overtly are sexist. Little things like someone had put on the website that her boss sends her messages on Skype when it's her turn, or when he wants a cup of coffee. So he would send her a message to say, can you make a cup of coffee for me, whatever your name is. But he wouldn't do that with any other of the team, all of who were fellas, and at the same working at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Thousands of little, tiny little stories, everyday sexism just kind of seeping in through society. Really interesting website.
I think that's interesting because I see that as probably being down to that man's mother. And if the mother doesn't teach the men autonomy, or doesn't teach them to be able to do things like make a cup of coffee,
yeah.
And if the mother always does things for the boy, then when he becomes a man, he just transfers that need onto the other women around him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
these things all start way back.
Yeah, yeah.
During our childhood, yeah, I mean, I'm super aware of that.
Mm.
As a dad of two lads, and just this morning, actually, just before we left the house to get the lads to school, I had BBC News on, and Will was putting his shoes on and getting his coat ready, and there was a feature came on about the women's football team, England, who played last night, and I think they won, I'm not actually sure who they were playing, and anyway, they won, and so they were just telling just about the result and who scored and all that stuff. It wasn't some special report about women's football, it was just a part of the news. And Will he asked me, Dad, do women play football? Like real football and people go watch them?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. Even Tranmere Rovers have a women's football team.
Mm. Do you want to people like Everton?
Yeah, I think all the big clubs do, except Man United. And I think Manchester United have just started up a women's team. Not sure what took them so long. But it's on television now, live, quite relatively often. And, you know, when the Women's World Cup is on, the BBC give it a lot of coverage on the website.
Can you remember the big thing that went on at Wimbledon about should the women get the same prize money as the men?
Oh yeah, that's still ongoing. I don't think the women get as much as the.
Isn't it that the women do work three sets, and the men work five? Isn't that the?
Yeah.
I think that was the argument.
Tennis is three sets of the majors. Is that the argument they used in the end?
I think so.
To kind of cover the fact that they didn't think that it was as exciting as the Rafa Nadal against Roger Federer.
As on an hourly rate, it was less.
Really? Okay. No. So why not just give ladies a five-set match? That'd probably bust the schedule, wouldn't it? But yeah. Or bring the women, or bring the men down to a 3-set.
Yeah, but then do you play the game of but they're only women, therefore they can only do a 3-set match?
Maybe possibly do
a 5-set.
I think there's probably a load of fellas at Wimbledon and the tennis organisations desperately trying to avoid having to say that.
Yeah.
You know. I wonder how long we'll have to wait till the ladies. Serena Williams, blooming heck, she's an unreal athlete, isn't she?
In fact,
one of the little examples of everyday sexism I saw was when you ask, Google or whoever, who the most capped England player is, and they'll proudly announce that it's Peter Shilton.
That surprised me. Yeah, it
did. With 125 caps for England, but actually. Rachel Yankee, England footballer, female, 129 caps. Still playing now, I think, actually. I think she's still playing.
Yeah.
And the response I get to that is depressing comments like, I thought you meant real football.
Mm. Ooh.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So a little lesson for my lad, Will, this morning, that, yeah, women play football and people go and watch it. And maybe we'll go and watch it at Tranmere, you know, next time they're playing.
Yeah, no, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? To see if you go into a female football match, I wonder who the audience, would you say audience? The crowd is made up of.
Yeah, I know, actually. Well, I'll go with Will and see. It'll be interesting.
Mm.
I know I'm quite a big Formula One fan as well, and there's loads of discussion about when there'll be the first female Formula One driver. Because there's quite a few racing categories that do have female drivers.
But is it that they're not allowed to, or they're just not?
No, they are allowed. In fact, there have been a couple that have been like the third driver for a team, so they've done the testing. So they haven't raced, but they're part of the development programme and they test the Formula One cars, but they haven't quite made it to the level where they race. But there are quite a few categories of racing where the girls have raced, and it's only a matter of time before a lady comes into F1.
Yeah.
And that will be interesting. I'm amazed there hasn't been one already, because there are really good female races and they would bring a lot of sponsorship money and a lot of media coverage. Next 5 years, I think, for sure.
Mm. So, I mean, I can remember my mother being called Mrs. George Orford. So she was, and she was legally a chattel. She was owned by him.
Flip neck.
You know, that's just a generation ago, really.
Yeah.
You know, crazy.
It's crazy, isn't it? But read on yourself. I've got this book for me to pass on to the lads and read to them tonight. Fantastically Great Women Who Changed the World, a children's book, which I think it profiles about 10 or 12 ladies, such as Rosa Parks and Anne Frank, of course.
Coco Chanel.
Coco Chanel, Amelia Earhart.
Pilot.
She was the second person to, like, full stop, to make it across the Atlantic in a plane. Not many fellas had done it, or only one actually, and quite a few had died. And in fact, what's the first story? Jane Austen. I did know this, but I'd only just been reminded. So when Jane Austen first published her book in 1811, she had to do it under a pseudonym, a male pseudonym, because it wasn't considered acceptable that a woman could work back then, let alone publish a book and have some kind of high profile. But obviously, the books went nuts, and I'm not sure at what point she kind of revealed, that would have been interesting.
Mm.
She revealed that, or she was allowed to put her own name on the front of a book as the author. But trailblazers like that, hey?
Yeah.
We owe a lot too, don't we?
Yeah.
All of us.
Look, I've got this thing up here, which is History Extra, which is a BBC thing, I believe. But it's got 100 women who changed the world. And number one on that is Marie Curie, which is the whole thing about cancer treatments, radioactivity and everything like that was down to her.
Mm.
Without that, none of that would have happened. She's the first on the list. Rosa Parks and the whole establishment of black rights in the States is, you know, Emmeline Pankhurst.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a whole list, isn't there?
Of inspirational stories there, but I mean, you don't have to be, well, there's Maggie Thatcher. Or maybe you are listening and you'll be that next person. But I guess
Florence Nightingale, nursing.
And even us fellas are capable of doing our bit to promote and keep the mission going for equality. isn't it? You don't have to be a female to push this stuff forward.
One of the things that bothers me a bit, and I get it's easy for a white male to say this, but it's like everything seems to swing. It's like the issue about, you know, am I black, am I coloured, am I brown, am I white, you know, what am I? And it's like we're so busy trying to be politically correct that we cease to treat people like just people. Mm. You know, it doesn't really matter whether you're fat, thin, whatever. It's like you're a person. But we're at that point at the moment where everything's under a magnifying glass and no one can say anything. There was a case, I think it was in Dubai, where a man fell over in a bar, tripped and grabbed another man's thigh to hold himself up and ended up in prison for harassment.
Oh my word.
And it's like, it's all that kind of stuff. It's hard to just be you. Mm. And I think that it becomes hugely, hugely difficult when we start saying, like, kind of men and women. So we're now talking about amazing women, and there's loads of amazing women. But if we can make the step to there's loads of amazing people,
yeah,
not there loads of amazing women, black women, Chinese women, you know, Arab women, we're people.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's us that breaks it up into male, female, you know, right, wrong, good, bad, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I find it all quite frustrating. And when I'm in Qatar and I'm working there, in the hospital, there's 85 different nationalities there. And it really highlights the status that people give each other. Mm. You know, people look up, they look down to different ethnicities and different genders and all that kind of stuff. And it's a real kind of melting pot. Someone should have written this up as a sociological study. It hasn't been done. Crazy. But that idea of the fact that we are sat here talking about a women's day in one way is amazing, but in another way, how do we get to it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
And how long will we need to keep talking about it until it's not an issue?
Until it's just normality, you know, we're just people.
Yeah, well, balance for better is the hashtag and the kind of message for this World International Women's Day. But I guess ultimately the goal is that we don't need balance. It's not like pressure being put on either side. It's just we're all lifted up together and we're not in need of balance at all because we're all just the same, doing our thing and, you know.
Yeah. And the idea that even now, with everything that we know, women are still paid less than men. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole idea, that it's been a big thing in the BBC and it's still not resolved, that how many female presenters we're getting half or less than what the men were getting.
Paxman and Clarkson and all that stuff. Yeah.
And that is so fundamentally wrong, because if we're just people, we all get the same.
Yeah.
You know, why should there be a difference?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's I guess we need to go through these tricky growing pains and these, I guess it's frustrating that we have to, because we shouldn't, but it's evolved over hundreds of years and this is where we're at. Mm. So I guess in some ways we're lucky that we have organisations like the BBC which are making mistakes in public and are allowing us to kind of shine a light and say, look, this needs sorting.
I think that it's great that we've got Theresa May, whether you agree with what she says or not, we've got her at number one, you've got Angela Merkel. Mm. You know, that there are women who are in number one positions, and are holding their own, and just demonstrating that it's not male or female, it's people.
Nicola Sturgeon,
In
fact, the Welsh Assembly leader, isn't she?
Yeah, I can't remember her name. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, keep going, eh?
Hmm.
What's your resource?
My resource is a UN thingy. It's this one, it's Women's Empowerment Principles. And you can get it online, you can download it. But it's published by the UN, and it's about how can women empower themselves. And one of the things that is very real is that we've got people demonstrating in Europe about their rights as women. And I think that's fine, exactly as it should be. Compared to other parts of the world, women are highly, highly disadvantaged in lots of cultures.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
And that really, really does need to be addressed. And that is a big ask. Mm. You know, it's a big ask for a lot of the men to be able to wake up enough to see what they're doing.
Oh man, I mean, yeah, we think we're doing all okay in the UK, but there's some places around the world that are on a different trajectory altogether, aren't they?
Yeah, and many people, and I guess in many ways rightly so, would say, but we're not doing well in the UK. You know, there's this wrong and that wrong.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, okay, that's right. It's of a different order and a different scale to other parts of the world. Doesn't mean saying we shouldn't address it, but yeah. Yep. Yeah. So what's yours?
Mine is an interview with, where's he gone? Greg Wise on Lost Love and Why We Need to Talk About Death. Which I watched this last week, and I really encourage everyone. Greg Wise is an actor, and he's married to Emma Thompson,
right?
Who is a very vocal campaigner for all sorts of issues, feminism being one of them, I think. So he talks about that, and also about the loss of his sister, I think it was, who died. And really interesting the way he kind of dealt with, or is dealing with, the loss of his sister. Not just that it was a tremendous emotional heartache for him, but also it was a real privilege. He talks about kind of going through the process as she died, through her illness, and what he got to learn about himself and her, and the world. And so it's really a candid discussion with a smart chap. Really recommend it.
Good.
Right, cool. All right, Sean. 301 next week.
301. As long as this gets up on air.
As long as it gets online. Yeah, well, if you're listening to it, it's online. So
yeah.
We'll get it sorted in the end. And take care till then, all right?
Okay, you take care.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.